Part 7, Chapter 5. Johnny awoke in the middle of the night to the abrupt realization that he knew where a uranium detector existed. The ore duster at the transshipment area. He had even spent apprentice time on it. So, despite Robert the Fox's prohibition against his scouting, Johnny was on a scout, dangerous or not. Every few days, he saw Chrissy. Each time he did, he made it a habit to ride around the mine site idly, just to accustom the cyclos to his being there. He would sit windsplitter and wander around. Today, Chrissy and Patty looked very forlorn. Johnny had brought fresh meat and more deerskin for them to tan, and so he had cut plenty of firewood. One of the Scots had unearthed a stainless steel axe from a village ruin, and it made such work remarkably fast. He placed all this outside the wooden barrier to be taken in when Turl was not busy and could come out. It was frustrating to talk through the wooden barrier and the cage bars. Chrissy and Patty held up some buckskin shirts and breeches for him to admire and then repackaged them for him to take. He called to them that they looked fine. Patty exhibited a new arrangement for their pitiful shelter. They could fasten nothing to the bars. And he said it looked much better. What was he doing? They wanted to know. He said he was working. And was he all right? Yes, he was fine. And were things going well? Just fine. Difficult to carry on a conversation across a space of 40 feet, through two screening barricades and under the surveillance of at least two button cameras. Difficult to be calm and reassuring when what he really wanted to do was blow the place up and get them out of there. He had a picto recorder on a strap around his neck. With a couple of buckskin thongs, he had steadied it to his chest so that with a slight motion of his hand, he could start and stop it without raising it to his eye. He had practiced doing that and had gotten pretty accurate at pointing it without looking through the finder. He requisitioned a dozen of the things and plenty of miniature discs. As he talked, he took pictures of the girls and the cage from several angles, pictures of the switchbox and wires. It was a risk, he knew. He told Chrissy and Patty he would be back and rode casually to a high point above the Chinko quarters. Seemingly idle, he took broad panoramas, both wide-angle and telephoto, of the mine site. He took pictures of the 20 battle planes lined up in the field, the distant cartridge fuel dump, and beyond that, the breathe gas storage dump. He took pictures of the morgue, 100 yards beyond the transshipment area, and he covered the freighter landing area and ramps and conveyor belt and control tower. Then, luck! He saw a freighter on its way in with a load of ore. He idled down off the knoll. As he passed the cage, he felt a sudden need for cautiousness. He dismounted and slipped the discs he had already taken into the waiting pack, making it appear that he was just putting in some flowers. Remounted, he wandered on down to the ore dusting area. He let Windsplitter pause near tasty clumps of grass, and at last came to the dust-coated area of transshipment. The freighter had not unloaded yet. Employees were coming out and getting onto their machines. He rode up to the ore dusting machine. The operator was not there. A hook was swinging from a crane, and he pretended to duck it, but in actual fact, he leaned over and pulled out a wire from the back of the machine's controls. He did not know its circuit, but with luck, he would very soon. The operator knew him slightly from his apprentice days, but glanced at him with normal cyclo disdain.
You better get that horse out of here! Ore coming in!
Johnny backed Windsplitter off